Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.
I feel like doing Enzo Amore right now. Like, how you doing? How you doing? We are the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio as well as YouTube. We're your boys. I'm Tristan Ducrosse alongside as my always is my partner in crime, the one and only.
Sean Ducrosse. Tristan, it's UFC Fight Week and, well, we simply again have UFC one more time. UFC Fight Night 91 is actually going on right now as we speak.
So for the first time as we are live, UFC is live right in front of us. So if something happens during our show, we will cut live to that show, to the UFC Fight Night 91 show, just because, well, we can. This week has been absolutely crazy. We're going to touch on the preview of Fight Night 91 first up, because that's going on right now. And the fact that, well, quite frankly, we have guys that are on this card that are trying to make a name for themselves, trying to establish themselves some kind of credibility on a Wednesday night. So here we go. We got Tony Ferguson taking on Landon Venata, who just apparently wants to poke the bear against El Kakui because he says that he's very predictable. But don't say that to the face of Tony Ferguson.
Well, he is going to say it to Tony Ferguson's face once he steps in that octagon, Tristan. There's no doubt about it. These two guys hate each other. Do not expect them to be touching gloves when they step foot in there. But the thing is that at first I was like, really? El Kakui fighting Landon Venata? How does this even make sense? This is a step backwards for Tony Ferguson. For a guy who has ran off, what, 7 fights in a row? Where it's like, okay, this guy has title aspirations. It's a great fight for him. But then you look at it and you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. The guy's 8-0. Nobody really knows who he is. But you dig a little bit deeper, and this fight on paper to me is actually quite scary if I'm Tony Ferguson. And I have not said that about a lot of guys who Tony Ferguson has beat up. He's beat up some tremendous guys. Edison Barboza, the list goes on. He's beat him up quite single-handedly. But there's something about this guy that kind of makes me take a step back. It's like, El Kakui, you're not in this guy's nightmares.
I love the fact that here's a kid, Landon Venata, who nobody's giving any kind of credibility to coming into this fight. But what I like about this matchup is that you get a wrestler, a sound wrestler, going against a guy that has somewhat good takedown defense.
That's very true.
But yet, here's a guy that is very fast-growing with his stand-up game, and he's knocked out his last 2 fights. So here's a guy that has good wrestling, but is now establishing his striking, and is going against a guy like El Kakui. This is really starting to kind of push the envelope and trying to set up something that could be a downfall for El Kakui if he looks past him or allows his anger to get the best of him.
Here's the interesting thing that I was thinking about looking at this fight on paper, was that El Kakui, to me, I disagree with Landon in the sense that Ferguson is predictable. He's not really predictable. You don't know what angle he's going to throw from. You don't know if he's going to flip, roll, duck, do a cartwheel 2 feet in front of you. You don't know what Tony Ferguson's going to do. But one thing you do know is that he's going to strike. And if he's going to take you down, he's going to beat you with some vicious elbows. But you transition. He hasn't fought anybody, at least to my knowledge, that is a world-class wrestler that Landon is. So if he tries to do that roll, tuck and roll, and try to grab an ankle, and this, that, and the other, what happens if he does that to Landon, and Landon catches him? out of 8 fights Landon has had, he's had 5 of them finished by submission.
But just like one of our boys, Skippy Cohen, he just said, he's like, dude, this is exactly what we've talked about numerous amount of times, is that a lot of people only know the star names. Here we're talking about Landon, about why you guys shouldn't sleep on Landon. We need to start educating these fighters. You know, and we're going to talk about the sell of the UFC here too as well, because what you and I were talking about, that we need to see something different. And we're going to talk about that here also. Landon is a guy that is a guy that's going to give you a little bit more wow factor. I'm going to go with the upset here and go with Landon Venata.
Tristan, that is me. That is my thing.
Right. I understand.
Bold predictor.
I understand. That's your thing. I get it. But I see this matchup, and I fear for Tony Ferguson, because here is a guy that was fighting, that was all set up and all geared for a top 5 fight. And now you're getting a guy that is a relatively unknown if you don't follow the game. You're facing a guy that has freakish power now. You're facing a guy that has more unanswers than anything. And if anybody's predictable, it is on the other side of the coin. It is Tony Ferguson, for that simple fact that you know what you're getting out of him.
Every time you know what you're getting out of Tony Ferguson.
You know you're going to get a fighter. You know you're going to get probably a fight of the night. But in what fact do you where do you go from here, Tony Ferguson, if he loses? Because to me, it calls it everything that he has done up until this point.
Well, yes and no. To me, is that if he loses to Landon, the way that I look at it is that, okay, if he loses, where does he go from here? Where he goes from here is that you got to finally figure out how to get Khabib healthy. Because on paper, that is the fight every fan still wants to see. Or you can't sleep on the guy that I've been talking about since going to the UFC. You can't sleep on the guy that everybody's sleeping on. Will Brooks. You all forgot that he's a champion from Bellator. You all must have forgot that this guy's king of kings when it comes to putting on fights. He's ranked number 12 in the UFC. That is disrespectful for a guy that was a champion.
To get a guy like Ross Pearson?
No, not to take anything away from Ross
Pearson. No. Tough fighter, tough guy that will put his body out there. Heck, he's taking a short notice fight at 202 against Jorge Masvidal. He ain't going to survive that, but what the heck. And there we go, folks. Smiling Sam Alvey, live right here on our show, just gets the knockout win of the night on UFC Fight Night. I believe it's a knockout, as he's just taunting and showboating.
It'll be a TKO, dude, stoppage to the strike.
Right. And I was going to talk about that fight, too. I said, I have it here right in my notes saying, Alvey's last 2 fights KO'd underperformed horribly.
Oh, no. He submitted him. With a standing guillotine.
Sean, check this out. Sam Alvey's issue is that he is a counterpuncher and has to somehow get the finish by a choke or by a standing knockout. Right here in my notes. He got the choke in the first round. Just saying.
It's different to see that come from Sam Alvey for standing guillotine in the fight when typically you don't see him submit a lot of guys. You see him out striking. But in this fight against Spicely was the fact that he was counterpunching a lot. He was waiting for him to come in, and he was really countering with his right every time. And there's a couple times where he popped some shots in there early and kind of caught him off guard eventually.
But that's what we keep talking about, Sean, is that if you're a counterpuncher, and another guy that's on this card, that is Michael McDonald versus John Lineker, Mayday is back after 2 years off. 2 years. Virtually a ghost for 2 years. But you see, John Lineker, who couldn't make weight for the life of him.
As a flyweight.
Goes up to bantamweight. Is now looking relatively good at this, at, at 135 right now. But he's a counterpuncher. You look at McDonald, who is a guy that's going to go right straight through you and try to bully you. So my question is about this fight is, do you get a guy like Lineker that is going to go out there and throw some heavy bombs? Or are you going to get Mayday and see actually Mayday come out and, I don't know, for the last 2 years, what have you been doing?
That's what happens when you are consistently injured and trying to fight your way back into the game and trying to be healthy. Ask Dominic Cruz how hard it was for him physically to get back at the next level. But you're talking about Michael McDonald and his nickname being Mayday. If you look at that, he may call and be calling Mayday. He may be calling for help because John Lineker is exactly that. He's going to bring the fight to McDonald. He's going to bring his hands to the battlefield, and all these two guys are going to do is slug it out. When you look at the percentage, McDonald comes in with a percentage of 45% KO rate. John Lineker, 35% KO rate. In his last couple of fights, Lineker has thrown his hands 64 times in 2 minutes against Francisco Rivera, 200 against Rob Font. Oh, my God. The hands are going to fly. If you want to see people just get knocked silly,
do you think this is going to be the fight of the night?
I don't know.
We already got possibly the submission of the night by Smiley Sam Alvey.
And then you go look at Courtney Casey, who fought earlier on the show.
Dude, brutal elbows, brutal ground and pound for a girl.
Who dropped elbows on Christina Stancio, I think is what it is.
Run with it.
Let's go with it.
Run with it. Track shoes on. Get your Nike Freeze. Go get it.
And it was just asked to us, did Sam Alvey win? Yes, Sam Alvey won via standing guillotine. Surprisingly to a lot of people.
Right?
I was so used to looking up and seeing a TKO or a knockout of some sort, but you see a standing guillotine. So, bravo for Sam, for Smiling Sam to do what Smiling Sam does. Put on exciting fights, and maybe he works his way back up and putting his name out there maybe as a guy to get into title contention. Maybe he's got one or two more fights that he needs to win to put together before he jumps into that.
Right.
But, I mean, it's an interesting fight. But you got to go back to the Lineker McDonald fight like you were saying, though. It's got to be the fight of the night. You've got so much going on in this UFC Fight Night 91 card that there's a lot of excitement behind it. There's a lot of stuff that's going on that, it again, could change the landscape of how UFC is viewed. And that's just the tip of the iceberg from what we've seen in the last, 72 hours or the last week?
That all of a sudden everything has switched. We got two new champions at the helm for the UFC. We got new ownership at the top with a familiar face. And that's still so much more coming on with the DuCross Brothers of Sports Warriors with Sean and Tristan DuCross. Take a brief break and come on back, all right? Sit tight.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation Magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. You're listening live right now to the Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan DuCross, along my side as always, and my partner in crime,
Sean DuCross. So, Tristan, UFC was officially sold finally for $4 billion. You kidding me?
I feel like Home Alone right now. Ah! $4 billion. $4 billion for UFC. UFC originally were bought for like somewhere north-south of that. Way north-south of that. But what is a interesting point about this was that the Fertitta brothers are done. They will keep a minor stake in the company.
Cool.
But they are done as the CEO of the company. They were forced to step down. And I love that word. They say forced to step down immediately. Let's be perfectly clear here. The Fertitta brothers were not forced to step down immediately. They accepted to step down because of what was happening.
There is no way that they're going to stay on as the CEO in order to for this buyout to go through. It made no sense. So the Fertitta brothers, here's what we do know. They were sold to WME IMG for $4 billion on Monday.
Which, at any point in time, you all know that IMG is a talent agency.
It is. And apparently they're the ones that helped facilitate the deal with UFC for Fox Sports.
And they were also the ones that were already behind Bones Jones getting a Nike deal.
So they've had their hands all in the cookie jar with the UFC for quite some time. So it only made sense for them to finally go, you know what, let us be the company to purchase the UFC. Let us be the one to put our name on the stamp. But here's the interesting thing. You want to continue to dig a little bit deeper, okay? We all know that the TV deal of UFC and Fox Sports ends in 2018. Here's the kicker that I noticed. I don't know why nobody else figured this out, why nobody else has made any mentions to it. But when I was doing my research and I was digging deep, maybe your guys at Fightbook, maybe everybody in the chat room, Jim Ward, Valeria, you guys all look at this. Go online right now. Look at the UFC logo, the new one they put out that everybody in the media world got attention to that they're using now. Look at that.
Very true.
Then look at the ESPN logo. Look at the two logos.
How eerily similar they actually are.
I was like, light bulb.
Really,
nobody...
really? Like this? Light bulb?
Yeah, because I can't put a light bulb on top of me.
Oh, so that's light bulb.
Yeah, like, got it. Duh, stupid. Come on.
Got it.
Because it's been, what, a year since they put out that logo?
Yes.
And nobody mentioned it? But then I'm...
Where we were the only ones that were, like, when Bellator was slowly starting to transition away from Bellator, and we were the only ones that caught, we're like, wait a minute. Whoa, Scott Coker must be coming. Everybody's like, why do you say Scott Coker's coming? Well, because everything is starting to look very close to what Strikeforce was.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, less than 48 hours later, boom. Scott Coker, release of his contract. Boom. Scott Coker over to Bellator. What? No. Sharky.
And also, IMG, the little bit of rumblings I've heard, is a big stay in L.A. So why wouldn't it be interesting that, you know what, they worked for one of the biggest TV deals in UFC history by signing with Fox Sports. When it ends in 2018, you know ESPN is going to come knocking. You know that's the deal they want to do. UFC on ESPN. So why not?
Oh, going to drop you some knowledge because something was just dropped on me, dude. And let's make this clear to everybody. If anybody wants to talk to the boys, Sean and Tristan Ducross, you guys are more than welcome to hit us up in the chat room on YouTube.com. You can find us there. Just search the Sports Warriors. You can hit us up on our Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross, or my page right now, TSW episode 71. I got a chat going on there. Skippy Cohen, again, just dropped knowledge on me, is that ESPN just laid off over 7% of their workforce and has sold over 50% of their radio station rights.
Well, that explains why you see a lot of turnover right now for ESPN in terms of their radio announcers, is that a lot of the veterans that have been around for a while are no longer around, or they're changing. But if you
that doesn't surprise me, because look at us. We were the very first MMA combat radio personalities in San Diego some like 4 or 5 years ago. We opened up the door for a lot of these so-called MMA shows that are out there. We opened up that door. So whether anybody actually cares about that or whatever, we were the very first ones on ESPN radio out here in San Diego. We were. And I will always let everybody know that. But we were the ones that were like, when we started hearing rumblings about how they want to start changing stuff, we felt like that it wasn't in our best interest to go that way. So we bowed out of that situation. Now you fast forward to where we are right now, and now you see the numbers, you know. It's going to take a lot of money to bring in the UFC into ESPN to make them money.
I get that they've laid off a lot of people. I get it.
But Disney still owns them. They still have money.
Correct. They still have money. They still have the capability of putting stuff on. I mean, for crying out loud, they've slowly altered their fan base towards combat sports.
Oh, absolutely. Hands down.
Bringing Glory on. Bringing the coach on. Bringing Gershom on. Also,
Sutton on. You know, they have their whole entire setup now that is geared to combat sports.
Even they've even brought WWE on to the network.
Exactly.
So they've brought that side on. You're talking about crossover. UFC went outside of the box and bringing over Brock Lesnar in a crossover attempt between UFC and WWE.
And why? Because it's entertainment.
So when you look at everything smart, From what WME and IMG does, being a talent agency for brokering deals between athletes and movie stars and whatnot, it makes sense on paper for them to end up at ESPN, because they're going to make ESPN more money. They're going to drive the revenue up more than what they have right now. So I think it's just positioning by ESPN, by letting go these people.
Good word.
To go ahead and free up some money so they can throw it back at the UFC.
Best word right there, hands down, Sean. You said it. Positioning. That's what it's all about. You look at the fact that there's so much competition. There's so many sports. Everything's geared to the online media. Everything is geared to one platform. Where can you get the most for your buck? That's basically what it is. You know, every person that watches MMA or watch combat sports, where are you watching it? Where are you tapping into it? You're tapping into it on your phones. You're tapping it on your tablets. You're tapping it on the internet. Wherever you can get it, you're getting it. So when you're looking at it, positioning is everything. You have seen over the last couple of months the positioning that they are taking. Like, let's just take off the blinders for a minute. The positioning says something can happen.
And that's exactly what we may end up seeing. Because, again, you got to look at everything, okay? When you look at TV package deals, Fox Sports, Fox Sports One, Fox Sports West, whatever it may be, isn't necessarily on all networks. You sometimes have to put that package into it. Oh, I want that sports package. ESPN is on every single communications package out there for cable. Everywhere. ESPN can be found everywhere. Fox Sports is continuing its ground and its growth. But in terms of name value, that's where you go. People that would go over to Fox Sports would probably be, you know what? You got to look at it and go, about that. Bellator, on its growth and its rising, would fit more on a Fox Sports network than UFC, because of the fact that UFC is the juggernaut of the two.
You know,
ESPN is the juggernaut of the two.
You know, whether you look at these platforms that you have, ESPN, for what they are starting to lose more of their voices, more of their personalities, more of their identity, And I think they're going to start grasping at straws to try to gain people back because the ratings are down over Fox Sports. They've lost out on a number of people. But it's weird that you see how many MMA combat sports has popped up underneath the umbrella of ESPN. Because ESPN Radio, I mean, dude, it's ridiculous how many shows have popped up underneath the ESPN umbrella that cover mixed martial arts, that cover MMA. It's ridiculous how vastly they have adapted that moniker, that culture, into what they are doing. So, in the end of all this, the UFC keeping Dana White 5 years, 9% ownership, 9% profit. You know, he's the boss. I get it. But now we need to start looking at pay raises for these fighters. Because if you now look at what Dana White is making, two other questions are going to rise from this for me. Okay? I'll stick with your point that you just made and Dana White, because the other one's going to stir the pot just because I want it. The other one will stir the pot. So I'll let that one simmer. You go ahead and you look at this. Okay, Dana White, 5 years, $9 million, in 9% profit, 9% equity stake in the UFC. He collects $360 million.
Sound like you should be on Shark Tank.
Before the buyout. I mean, before the taxes.
Okay. Do you think
why
UFC
went on Shark Tank? So what I don't get is why is it that Dana White maintains 9% equity stake in the UFC, but yet he signs a 5-year deal. He can apparently opt out of his contract at any point in time, but he still maintains
9% ownership.
He's going to become Dana White, what essentially was Don King to boxing in the late 90s era.
Yes.
He's going to have to manage the fighters, make sure that he gets the cards to bring
them.
Yeah, he's going to have to do all that. And also on top of that, he's going to have to run the day-to-day operations while the CEOs up above are paying out and making sure everything continues to run smoothly. Because they're not going to know the insides and outs of the UFC of an MMA game like Dana White is. What they did by keeping Dana White was the smartest business move in quite some
time.
They
had to keep somebody that had an ounce of MMA knowledge, because if you have these guys that have $4 billion in their back pocket that know nothing about the mixed martial arts world outside of, well, we advertise and we pay these guys to actually go to movies and red carpet appearances and get Nike deals. That's all fine and dandy. But let's just be real for a minute. None of those guys at the top know what the heck they're doing. And that means,
Dana White,
you get a slapping tickle and you still get to be the whooping boy, because at the end of the day,
you're still
everything
doing
is still going to be on your shoulders.
You're still going to do more work now than what you did before.
You're going to be that guy that's going to be standing up top at a 24-foot skyfold on the Ultimate Fighter while Claudia Gadea hits a bullseye and dunks you in the tank. That's what you're going to be known for, dude. Giving a stack of cash to fighters, because that's what he's going to be about. And when you look at Dana White and what he and profits, I can guarantee you that the matchups now are not going to be these matchups that everybody wants to see. You saw it perfectly at UFC 200. What was it about? It wasn't about good fights. It wasn't about good matchups. What was it about? It was about money. It was about the bottom dollar. It was about the money. Why? Because look at Anderson Silva. Dude didn't train. Pudgy, because he was throwing back beers off of a plane. Comes down, Dana White catches him at the airport and says, hey, dude, I'll pay you $600,000. You step in the cage against DC, and you get a payday in 2 days. You get paid for taking the fight
that,
in 2 days.
That brings up a whole other topic that we have coming up after the break in a few minutes. So we'll touch on all that. Trust me. That's just more coming. But you know what? The stir of the pot needs to come.
Stirring of the pot.
World Series of Fighting got in trouble for their matchmaker representing fighters in fights.
I forgot about that. Ali Shabazz. His name's not Shabazz, so don't worry about it. But I just felt like saying Ali Shabazz.
WMEIMG represents Ronda Rousey.
And they say that that won't
change anything is that they've never negotiated her contract. You may not necessarily have to negotiate her contract for people to start questioning how much influence
they're going to have in what Ronda Rousey does.
What is best for business? You already saw Brock Lesnar crossover between WWE and UFC. Who's to say that they don't pull another page out of the WWE playbook, and that is, oh, hey, you're doing a movie? Come back. We'll bring you back to fight, and we'll bring you back to promote said movie.
But I also think that there's some kind of interesting moment between the MMA world and the wrestling world, because I think at this point is that we're going to see Ronda Rousey sooner rather than later in the WWE ring. Because of that crossover thing that we're talking about.
WrestleMania.
Right? It's coming. It's coming. You know, whether anybody likes it or not, it's coming. And it's funny that people keep going, like, that's not going to happen. Yeah, it will. She's already taking the movie roles. They have this play-in with the WWE. She was there with The Rock. Oh, The Rock is one of the main players for IMG and WME.
But yeah, he's not going to own anything
Right, but it's funny that everything, again, folks, dude, don't be blind. Don't be oblivious to this. Everything is lining up straight down the pipe.
You're going to end up seeing a movie with The Rock in a UFC octagon. Trust me on that one. That's already coming. That's already being dialed in. Let's be real. That's coming down the pipe, especially when he made an announcement like last month saying that he's always thought about fighting. Go figure.
Shocking.
Then they go ahead and purchase out UFC. It only starts to blend and starts to make sense.
But Sean, we're going to take a quick break and come back with UFC 200. And what did you all think about that? And that puke yellow mat? That's what I'm calling it. Really was not gold. People used other words to describe that mat, but I will not go there. But more with the Sports Warriors with Sean and Tristan Ducross coming up after this. We'll be right back.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. You're listening live right now to the Ducross Brothers with Sean and Tristan Ducross. Sean, UFC 200, biggest pay-per-view event in the history. Well, not really history of the UFC, but pretty darn close.
No, it made if it said
for Las Vegas, not for UFC. For Las Vegas, their biggest event ever. In Las Vegas.
And you can take Brock Lesnar for that one.
Yeah.
And his $2.5 million purse he got.
$10.7 million at the gate. $2.5 of that will go right to Brock Lesnar. Have a nice day. How you doing?
And thank you for coming back. Thank you for putting on a fight against Mark Hunt. And thank you for being the best fight of the evening.
Best fight of the evening? Really? You think so?
I mean, when Misha Tate gets run over like a bulldozer, I can't really say that was entertaining. When you've got Jose Aldo counter-striking everything Frankie Edgar did, can't really say that was entertaining.
Lasted for, what, about 30 seconds, that fight?
So, yes, I'd say that one was more interesting fight. But it was one of those fights that you sat back and was like, some of the shots were sickening thuds by Brock Lesnar that made you go, ugh.
Cringe a little bit?
Easy. And then you look back and it's like, okay, he wasn't fully going full tilt. And if he's not going full tilt, what does full tilt now look like for Brock Lesnar?
Right.
But what is next for Brock Lesnar at the age of 40 years old now? Because he turned 40 this past week. Is he going to fight again? Will we see him fight again?
Dude, I think hands down we're seeing him again in the UFC. Hands down.
After that fight, I would only assume so. Because of the fact that he beat him up so bad. I mean, we were saying that his face didn't look bad, but if you saw the post-fight press conference, you saw just how bad Mark Hunt's face was after it. So you look at it, it's hard to dispute that. But I came up with some interesting fights. If I'm Silva and I'm matchmaking Brock Lesnar, what about Roy Nelson, who's coming off a loss to Derek Lewis? Or what about Derek Lewis, who called out Brock Lesnar?
Right.
Or you could give him the winner of Andre Arlovski versus Josh Barnett. You could go so many different ways with Brock Lesnar. Mark Hunt, you just need to reevaluate that. He will come back. But who he should fight? I'll just leave that on the table. So, Brock Lesnar comes back dominating fashion. That was the saving grace of the event. Amanda Nunes destroying Miesha Tate shocked people, but left more questions than answers.
Dude, okay. Amanda Nunes wins. Cool. Congratulations. All the power to you. First openly gay woman champion in the history of UFC. Cool. You're going to bring in that crowd to support her. That's cool. I respect
that. That is great for the UFC to
Absolutely.
Have that.
Absolutely, because that's marketable. But the issue that I have right now is with the bantamweight division.
Oh, the revolving door that not one woman can hold on
to. Dude, it's like a lazy Susan. That's what that is. The UFC's bantamweight division, hashtag Lazy Susan. The only champion that remotely remains at the top. Dude, people are still talking about it. Like, Ronda Rousey's been gone. We've already had what could be 5,000 different champions by the time she comes back.
I mean, it's good for the women in the bantamweight division.
Why? Because every single girl that is mediocre can hold the title?
Pretty much.
I'm not good enough to beat Ronda Rousey, but I'm good enough to beat these other women so I can be champion.
But here's my other question. Is that how much did Amanda Nunes defeat a 100% Miesha Tate?
Right? Because of the horrific weight cut?
Absolutely. How much of that weight cut was taken out of Miesha Tate? So in some sense, I would like to see a Miesha Tate versus Amanda Nunes again just to see if these two are that different, that polar opposite. But then again, do I also want to see what Miesha Tate went through in that weight cut? That goes again to everything you and I have talked about with every woman MMA fighter we've ever got a chance to talk to.
It's harder for them to cut weight.
And I talked to Gord McDonald earlier today from MMA Madhouse regarding this topic. And that is that I feel bad for the women who's got to try to cut weight to get down to these weights. Why do you have to label a bantamweight at 135? If you don't want to have a higher weight class, then just change the structure of the weight. Give these women an opportunity to fight. Why must they cut so much weight and hope they're okay? How exhausted was Miesha Tate coming into this fight?
And when is it really enough? When is that toll done? You know,
That is weight cutting. I want to say weight cutting is almost an art form, because all these fighters, they take precautions. You're supposed to, at least. But man, you get down to like a couple of pounds, and if you're not making it, you're done. Like, it will literally suck the life straight out of you. And anybody that has been in wrestling understands weight cut is no joke, but that's why these weight cut measures are now being put into effect.
And it's still affecting.
But if you cannot maintain your weight loss, like, you know when you're going to fight. There is absolutely no reason why you should miss weight that much.
So, I just want to see that fight one more time, but then you got to make a case for Juliana Pena that you look at Juliana
That's
Pena.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, Skippy Cohen, yeah, catch weight. Maybe that makes a little bit more sense for the women because they find it drastically harder to compete at some particular weight. But you got to look at, too, is that you've got Juliana Pena, who is now 8-0, 4-0 in the Ultimate Fighter, 4-0 in the UFC.
Sexy Fix It.
Defeats Kat Zagano. When is her time coming? You're looking at
Kat Zagano's time up?
You're looking at the revolving door of this division. So when do you give her this opportunity?
I say next. I think we're going to see another fight before Ronda Rousey comes back. We're going to see a fight. Amanda Nunes will defend that title before Ronda Rousey. I think at this point there's only one girl left standing. There really is. And that's Juliana Pena. Because Holly Holm has that girl Shevchenkov or something like that that's coming up. So I believe that the winner of that will eventually get a title shot. But I think either A, one of two things have to happen is that Julia Pena gets the winner of that, and then the winner of that gets Amanda Nunes.
I can attest to that. I can go ahead and see like a Holly Holm versus Juliana Pena. That would be an interesting striking match.
And the weight waiter stuff will actually happen a little bit easier for them.
So I can tend to agree with that one. But after the defeat of Misha Tate, why not put Misha Tate involved in a title eliminator with Kat Zagano?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just end it.
End it.
End this revolving, repetitive door and just say it is what it is.
We need to bring that back a little bit more, you know? The title eliminator, just eliminate some fighters and just put them off to their pasture. Kat Zagano, she did not look great coming into this fight, let alone did she even put up a good fight against Juliana Pena.
Well, one of the guys that surprised me coming into the fight, and I know I'm surprised I didn't hear it as soon as it all happened from our buddy Roberto, was Cain Velasquez looking like he used to. That was the question that was answered for us.
Yep.
Was he going to answer the bell? Was he going to be the old Cain Velasquez, and was he going to come out and put on a show to show that he's not aging? So you look at this. He comes out, does not one, but two spinning wheel kicks. Hello? Is this Cain Velasquez that we're talking about?
But how much of that really, with his balanced attack, how much of that did that really kind of say, you know what, he's back? Because to me it looked like Hopper Brown just quit. Like, I was yelling, just yelling at the screen, just saying, you know what, just quit. I even posted it all over Facebook saying, just quit. And you're like, why? I was like, dude's not even fighting. I was like, dude, just turtle. Just turtle.
And that's eventually what
he did.
And
then all of a sudden, he eventually just turtled. I was like, oh, look, there you go. Like, he got hit upside the head
with one spinning wheel kick that doesn't even land flesh.
Flesh, but yet he was a guy that was like, flinch,
I'm done.
Flinching, not once, but twice he flinched. When you're throwing out the right hands and you're throwing out wheel kicks and they're not doing real damage, but yet you're quick to all of a sudden flinch at everything that is being thrown at you, ducking and falling to the canvas, I have a problem with that.
You and everybody else will.
You're a heavyweight. You know that you're going to get in a slugfest or in a dogfight.
So you come into that fight. And we were actually wrong on that sense. And bravo for Cain Velasquez Well, I was finally turned away in the sense that Cain Velasquez looked slightly fluffy. But he ended up winning. A fluffy fighter actually won.
Right.
My thought process was actually wrong on that one. But then you go to the co-main event. Well, not even the co-main event. The third fight. Daniel Cormier versus Anderson Silva. I get Anderson Silva's an icon. I get he's a legend.
He's a GOAT. Dude, if I hear that one more time.
He is the GOAT. He is the greatest of all time.
Man.
He did things that nobody else in the MMA world ever saw or ever will ever see in this sense. If you look at what Anderson Silva, I give him props for stepping up the light heavyweight and showing up, I guess you could say, for a payday. But you look at Daniel Cormier, and in that fight, he kept saying, well, I took the fight on 2 days' notice. Like, really? Took the fight on 2 days' notice, and you lollygagged in a fight? You hugged and slept on Anderson Silva for 3 rounds?
Sean, what did I say about that?
The best moment ever. The best moment ever of the fight, Tristan. Anderson Silva goes to throw a kick against Daniel Cormier. Cormier catches the kick and gently puts Anderson Silva on the mat. That's when you knew that fight went horribly awry. When you gently put another fighter on the mat and say, oh, I thought it was the fact that DC laid on him. And at first, I swear, he could play Pokemon Go the whole entire time. And he would not catch a Pokemon because all he was sleeping on Anderson Silva.
Hey,
dude, he loves the top position. Hey, you're missing the Pokemon. He's over there to the right. If you just get up for 2 seconds, you can catch him on the right. But no.
He couldn't get up.
He couldn't get up.
No.
But the bad thing is that, yes, he took a lot of heat. Daniel Cormier took a lot of heat in this fight for laying on top of Anderson Silva. But again, at the same time, taking the fight against a guy like Anderson Silva, whether he's aging and slowing down and whatnot, the bottom line is, too, is that strategically, it was a smart fight for him. He did what he needed to do, good, bad, or indifferent. He did what he needed to do. Because at the end of the day, Tristan, if he stood there and tried to trade with Anderson Silva and Anderson Silva somehow knocked him out, that would be the end of Daniel Cormier.
With like a minute left, he almost killed him.
Exactly.
He hit him right just below the rib cage
and almost ended the fight.
It's like,
but
okay.
That's the thing. Anderson Silva could potentially have still ended that fight. So if you're Daniel Cormier, you don't risk that.
But I think at this point in the career, you're a champion. Who cares about a catastrophic loss? Dude, you're in the fight business. You're in the hurt business.
Tristan.
Your job is to go out there and put
Tristan,
on a fight.
I care.
Why?
I'm not a heavyweight champ. He's a middleweight. He's lost his last two fights. I care. If it means that I got to hold on to you like I have a straitjacket strapped to me, I'm going to do that. If that's my best strategy coming into this fight, I'm going to do that. If you are that good that you can implement your best wrestling game, and just walk it out, bravo for you. But that's how bad this was that this could have been so much better on this fight card. But John Jones had to go ahead and screw it up. And we could not go this whole show and not talk about John Jones. We couldn't. Not to overshadow what happened with UFC, but it kind of did. It kind of overshadows everything that UFC 200 happened. Because at the end of the day, you're still wondering what he tested exactly positive for. The fact that both of his supplements came back positive for.
Does he have girl?
Maybe that explains a certain thing. Because you go and you look
I
at...
I said it.
And you go and look at that Rashad Evans, Chael Sonnen, both have came out and said that John Jones has tested positive for estrogen blockers. Estrogen blockers.
Let that sit and marinate.
So you look at that, and you look at the supplement company that he was with Gate. Gate came out and said, everything that he's taken from us passed it with flying colors. They tested third party and everything passed. You look and you dig deeper into what estrogen blockers are. Estrogen blockers that, if he took it, could have been Clomid. Probably butchering that a little bit. But that may increase testosterone. Testosterone inside of you is a natural steroid. A natural steroid. If you use an estrogen blocker long enough, it boosts your testosterone in the males, that to the point it creates muscle mass, it creates performance. Or he could have used the estrogen blocker as a way to wean himself off of steroids. It's a cycle. It's a post-cycle for after steroid uses. So he could have used steroids and then tried to wean himself off and get his testosterone levels back up so he doesn't get dinged for it. But either way, it raises a red flag. For Gate, the supplement company, to come out and say that they don't have a product that is banned by USADA, I tend to disagree. After my conversation with Fightbook and Roberto, was that you dig deeper in the Gate, and there's shadiness behind it. And I say shadiness because there is shadiness behind it, considering the background that I achieved. Okay? You go to Gate. Gate has a testosterone amplifier called Testogen. Testogen is something that comes in a pill form.
Mr. PhD in doctoronomics right here, Sean Ducrosse.
It's something that comes up and raises your testosterone level. Testogen, estrogen. Either way, it bumps up your testosterone. Red flag here. The warning label on this product says as follows. Substance test warning. Bodybuilders and other athletes subject to substance testing should never use this product unless first approved by the validating organization. Product may cause a drug test result to be a false or false positive, either urine or blood. So either way, you're going to fail a steroid test. Why? Because it's like a masking agent is what it sounds like. So either way you look at it, if he's taking this product from Gate, one of two things happened. Either A, he tried to boost his own inner steroid to go ahead and make him better, or he was taking steroids. Either way it happened. If you want to dig a little bit deeper, Gate Supplements has a underground supplement line from Russia. It was brought to my attention that Gate also knows about this product, puts it on underground supplement lines, and you can still achieve it if you know how to dig deeper to get that product from Russia, where you could get it legally over the counter. A la years ago when you saw Major League Baseball players driving across to the Mexico border
to get a certain steroid
over the counter. So this does not surprise me. So for him to say that he doesn't know...
He did not knowingly take steroids. That's like him pulling out the Rafael Palmeiro card, sitting in the front of Congress, looking straight at you. Wait, whoa, that was almost like a Bill Clinton moment there. I did not take steroids. Okay, dude. Whatever you say. You got caught. Fess up to it. That's always been my one problem.
With that,
America, United States of America is one of the most forgiving places ever. Because if you admit that you were wrong, admit you were caught, you say sorry and you are apologetic to the way that you get caught, the world will simply turn their back, turn a blind eye,
and forgive you.
And forgive you. But when you openly deny knowing, when you know you've been caught, it is downright disrespectful to the fans, to the media, to the organization, for anybody.
Like if you go on Fightbook, on their Facebook page, they posted a photo, a screenshot of John Jones saying how happy he was back to be back in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and about a rainbow, and saying, well, at least there's something bright at the end of the rainbow. Really, dude? Own up to your mistakes. Is this a Jones thing here? You're afraid to own your own mistakes?
He doesn't care, dude. He doesn't care. That's the issue. He doesn't care. Like, he's going to screw up. He's going to screw up, period. There's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way around this, man. He is straight up a polarizing screw up.
And there's no way around it. I'm waiting for him to go on Dr. Drew on the rehab show they've got on VH1 at some point.
And he could join, what's the kid's name?
But you know what? I digress. That was a conversation that I've had for the last couple days with Roberto from Fightbook about the findings that I had and then the findings that he had. So we put them together, and it was just like, mind-boggling.
Right? Because you were able to find out all of this.
It was just mind-boggling to find out that how deep this guy is.
I'm proud of you. You were like Dr. PhD right there. Damn, dropping some hardcore knowledge on them
fans.
Don't
try to pull the wool over the fans' eyes and try to say you didn't know.
Right.
Don't try to sit there in a press conference crying your eyes out. That explains a lot. He took estrogen blockers and he was crying.
Right. The female hormones came out.
But don't sit there and try to play devil's advocate. Come on. You knew what you were doing.
This is very true.
But then we flip over, and I digress. Flip over. Does anybody really care about Bellator 158 London this week? It has gone through so many car changes that I had chicken scratch writing down on my paper to figure out who was fighting who still. Because the original card featured Paul Daly versus Josh Koscheck, Michael Venom Page versus Fernando Gonzalez, Kimbo Slice versus James Thompson, Lynn Vassell versus Francisco Amal. Now it features Paul Daly and Douglas Lima.
Francis Cuomo versus newcomer Luquez Klinger.
Then you've got MVP versus Cyborg Santos, the original. And then you've got what you said in Francis Cuomo versus Luquez Klinger. Then you scrap the Kimbo Slice fight altogether and give it Matt Mitrone and Ollie Thompson. Does anybody really care about that fight card?
I don't know. I think Douglas Lima is going to run right through Paul Daly.
If I'm Paul Daly, I'm freaking out. That's my toughest test, and you're giving me Douglas Lima?
The former welterweight champion, you're going to put him in there.
The guy who has finished his last 7 opponents,
and the guy that has, if anybody has the amount of power that Paul Daly has, it's clear as day that it is Douglas Lima.
Like, my goodness.
And if Douglas Lima could get past Paul Daly, I think this puts him right back in the title hunt. But what I actually like the matchup between Michael Venom Page versus Santos.
I don't. If I'm Michael Venom Page, I'm scared.
See?
Not because of the tattoos and the fact that he looks like a weird guy out of a crazy comic book. But, yeah, you know, if I'm Michael Venom Page, I do not want to stand and strike with him. I really don't.
I just looked at you have 4 fights. In 2016, in a 7-month span, I'm thinking, dude, you got the grappling edge, you got the ground game, I get it. But the stand-up game, you don't want none of that from Michael Venom Page. Yes, probably the biggest fight to date for Michael Venom Page. But don't sleep on him, because you have to be able to perform. Everybody keeps saying, you haven't fought anybody. You haven't fought anybody. Here you go. First round knockout by Michael Venom Page. Because the body is not meant to go through 4 fights in 7 months. It's not. Your body's just physically not going to put on a show the way that it's supposed to. It's not going to happen. And then you look at Francis Cormier versus Lucas Klinger. Dude's 1-2 in his last two fights. That's the lob for Francis Cormier.
You're hoping that the real Francis Cormier shows up.
He was KO'd in 15 seconds. In 15 seconds. And you get Francis Cormier from TriStar. If I'm Francis Cormier, just look across the cage. Go with your inner DC and grind out a win. Because it's that simple.
So that's about it, what we have for Bellator 158. But we also can't forget that we had news that was dropped to us just as we were about ready to go on our show.
Yep.
So our buddies over at True Form Entertainment went ahead and ran into a little bit of issues with their August 26th card that featured
Johnny Cisneros
versus DD, in which that fight had to be scrapped due to the fact that Johnny Cisneros
had signed to a 3-fight contract with Bellator and will be fighting August 26th against, don't know why, Andy Murad? M-U-R-A-D? How would you pronounce that?
I'm just going to let you keep doing
it. Lob City. Lob City, folks. Like L.A. Clippers. Like Chris Paul to Blake Griffin.
All day. So, Andre Didi will be taking on a replacement of Marcos Gonzalez. August 26th at True Form Vengeance. So, stay tuned for more on that whole situation going on. But it'll be an interesting fight for Andre Didi to take on Marcos Gonzalez. Once we have a little bit more information, we'll go ahead and talk about that one, break down that those two fighters going toe-to-toe now.
Absolutely. But we are done. Enjoy Ultimate Fight Night. And have a wonderful evening. We are the New Cross Brothers of Sports Warriors, Sean and Tristan New Cross. You can go ahead and find us on Facebook, Sean and Tristan New Cross. Like our fan page at
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA show.
Happening around the...
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.